Buenas.
This is harmonizing for me.
Wow.
Fourth harmony incoming.
Pitch Perfect is shaking. Hello, and welcome back to Film Posers, for Boricuas ranting, raving, and reviewing cinema. Today, in honor of spoopy season, the best time of the year, we will be talking about creatures. More specifically, our favorite creature features. And this episode will be moderated by moi, Gabriela Burgos, resident creature feature lover. What exactly is a creature feature? What defines it? Well, it's pretty straight to the point. It is a film that features, you guessed it, a creature or a monster, whatever you prefer to call it. And it's pretty straightforward, but the main conflict revolves around the creature, and it tends to be the main antagonist of the story, and the whole point of it is to defeat it. A few classic examples of this: Godzilla, Jaws, Frankenstein, Alien. All of them feature a monster wreaking havoc to the humans, and the humans must team up to defeat it. Again, unlike the other films that we have discussed, like in our slasher episodes, our rom-com episodes, creature features are pretty straightforward, but they, as long as they stick to the monster, and the monster is going to destroy humanity, or a group of humans in a certain environment, that's it. That's all that it needs to be classified as a creature feature. My question to you is, what are your thoughts on these films, and what do you think makes them better than other films in the horror science fiction genre, which is where these types of films tend to fall in? Starting with Anna.
So when it comes to creature features, I feel that there's also a subgenre within a subgenre with this kind of theme, because if you think about it, creatures are also a representation and a reflection about ourselves. Think about it. When it comes to humans and creatures, it also can represent the psychological fear, and we see it in It. We see the human impulses on the film The Gremlins. And on the other hand, in films such as The Bird, Cujo, and Crawl, we see how nature manifests itself when it's mistreated. So in a way, creature features can be fun, but it also has a deeper meaning, a deeper metaphor within the story, within the movie. So I think it is a very interesting take, if you want to, you know, twist it up a little bit, on the subgenre.
Yeah, I agree. I do think that they definitely have different ways of manifesting the monster. And I find that very interesting about how I find it to be one of the most unique genres, because to me, despite the trope of, oh, we gotta defeat the monster, I find that each film is very different. Each film does a very unique take on the monster. And that's why I really like monster movies.
Yeah, you can see it like you said. For example, The Thing. We see them trying to defeat the monster, but if you think about it, it can also be a reflection how us as humans, in a way, we fear that not everybody is what it seems to be.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of The Thing, we have a Thing breakdown episode. If you have not listened to it yet, make sure to check it out. But yeah, The Thing is an excellent example about how it also plays with, you know, the human instinct of trusting people. How you're in a scenario where you literally cannot trust anyone because they could be the thing and kill you.
Yeah, I also just really like how it doesn't necessarily have to be a monster, which I know it's why you picked, like, why you wanted to do this episode because of the monsters. But I mean, it's really been evolving. I mean, a perfect example is Last Night in Soho, which if you haven't seen it, it's currently in theaters. And the monster in that film is very specific, even though it is altered to look into a horrific sense. It's not exactly what, in a common way, would it be. It is elevated to a more horrific nature. So there is that. But still, the base of it is very simple and common. And yeah, then there are moments like, for example, Jurassic Park, where it's dinosaurs. So it's stuff that did used to exist, but it doesn't anymore. So it also plays around with history and reality. And it's grounded, but you're still scared because, of course, it is something that has, that could threaten your life. So there's also that aspect of your life feeling threatened. There are usually, there's an implication that your cast should tend to be contained just to better allow you to develop your monster. So like, for example, if you wanted to make a creature feature, treat your creature or your threat as a character. It needs to have its own development because oftentimes it will serve as a foil to your main character if you choose to have a main character or the main characters of the group. But usually do try to have like a main focus because you should always have a clear narrator or clear perspective to follow. And usually the monster will play as a foil. So definitely have two lines of character development when you go throughout your film. Also, that's just what makes a good film to watch. Especially a good example is A Quiet Place. How you go through the motions of trying to figure out what this creature is, and it doesn't necessarily have its own character arc in terms of like wants, needs, etc. But you do clearly understand the objective and what it's trying to do, what it's trying to get. But then you're also figuring out more of how it works and everything. And that also happens in Super 8, which is one of my favorites. Which is also the rule that you shouldn't show your monster if you can try not to.
Okay, I know it's very, like, I love what you say about in Super 8 how they don't show the monster much. And while I do like it when the monster is kept a secret, the satisfaction you feel when you see the monster finally.
Yeah, because you're building up. You yes. have to build up to it, which yeah, is why in Stranger Things, yeah, mm-hmm. season one is one of the most effective in the horror sense of it all, because you don't know what's going on. So in the second one, they had to elevate it and added more of that one thing to amplify the fear and the threat to these characters, because you already know what's up. You already know what it looks like, etc. So you have to amp it up because, again, simplicity really helps in these kinds of films. Like, keep your location very simple. Keep your cast very, like, a small number if you can. You don't need more than one monster, honestly. One monster is enough. And if you can hold off on showing it to your audience, it works because there's nothing more... There's nothing scarier than the unknown.
Oh, okay. I know it's not the best example, but I do think that a film that does that very well is Bird Box. Did you ever watch that one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you know how yeah. we never actually see the monster, but the whole point of the monster is that it is a like a reflection of our worst fears. Mm-hmm. And that's why people react the way that they do when they see it. So I do like how that how it plays, you know, with fear and how we don't need to see it in order to be terrified of it. So I like how that film does that.
Yeah. Another example that I know it's an old film, but it worked during the moment of the release was Jaws, because literally yes. half of the film, we don't even get to see the shark itself, and it builds tension, especially with the score. And then you have that final impact that you finally get to see the shark.
I agree. I do love like the big reveal of Jaws. I do love it. It's very simple, but it's very effective. And how, you know, that classic line, gonna need a bigger boat.
Exactly.
It's very satisfying. So, yes.
So, I usually enjoy a good creature feature depending on what the monster will be. I agree, like has been previously said, I do enjoy not knowing what it looks like. But then I also like, for example, I didn't love this film that I'm going to bring up, but I think it's a good example, Underwater with Kristen Stewart, where they took that element of being underwater and added that to making it a more tense experience, because you not only have no idea what this monster looks like, you're running against the clock, you're running against the fact that you may or may not have air to make it to the other side where you need to. So I really like that aspect of the movie. And I remember Gabriela really loving that monster reveal.
It was Cthulhu. Of course I was gonna love that monster reveal.
Oh yeah.
It was really great when you actually see the silhouette of Cthulhu. Oh boy.
Oh yeah.
I agree. The movie's not the best, but that monster reveal truly made the entire movie.
Oh yeah. And for me also, I grew up, I guess, watching some creature features, Jurassic Park. I'm going to mention this, Scooby-Doo 2, Monsters Unleashed, classic cinema, where you see these monsters in a real world element and you see the characters' thought process. How am I going to approach taking this monster down? Like Gabriela said, that's the point of a creature feature. You see them act in real time. You see them make mistakes, and you also see how they can learn from their mistakes so they can see what's the weakness. So I really like that aspect of a creature feature. It's very much not one strike and it's done. It's a constant battle.
Yeah. A really good point about that. Guillermo del Toro is the king of monster movies, and I will die on this hill.
No, he really is, because he adds so many details.
I love monster movies because of him.
Absolutely.
This is all because of him. Shout out, Guillermito. I love you.
Yeah, and with Hellboy, you not only get that real life aspect, but you also play with that supernatural element of these monsters. Mm-hmm. And here in Hellboy films, you see a side of humility and humanity. When it comes to, for example, Hellboy and Selma Blair's character, and you see that they are real people, sometimes you're just supposed to be afraid of monsters. Hence when they show how regular people are afraid of them, but they didn't ask to be born like that, but they do embrace it. And in some case, they try to just keep to themselves because they don't want to start problems. They just want to live their lives. So I like that aspect of a creature feature when you start to think, are we the monsters for shaming people who are just different? And that's one of the aspects you do play with a monster film, because we can have those monstrous tendencies, emotion-wise, projecting some insecurities as to be like, you're different, we're excluding you from that regard, and you are hurting someone, because essentially Guillermo del Toro portrays them as a person.
Yeah, that was gonna be my point. Did somebody had the film?
Anna and I are on the same wavelength. Recently.
We're gonna go back to Guillermito.
Okay, tengo otro punto, otra cosa. On the other hand, I like how some of the creature features uses the humans turning into monsters as a coming of age story. Like, for example, Ginger Snaps, where she turns into a werewolf, and you can see how she is rebelling against her sister, and then all her emotion starts to blur. And I really like that aspect that a creature feature can have.
Yeah, and how another example that I think of is in this movie Love and Monsters, how we're supposed to see the monsters as the bad guys, but it's actually the humans.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was my agenda in 2020.
Yeah. So I really like how it also plays with, you know, maybe the because maybe the monster is just a creature trying to exist in peace, and the humans are, you know, invading its space and all of that, because many creature films also elaborate on that. An example of it, King Kong. My boy was just living his life in Skull Island, and the humans invaded and took him away. He was not the villain, he was a victim.
He just wanted to go around and just vibe with his life.
He was just vibing in Skull Island.
And then some people came in and colonized it and tried to be like, yep, this is our land now. And Kong's just like, excuse me, you come into my home unannounced, uninvited, and you try to take my home from me? How dare you? How can you blame him for what he does?
Exactly.
He didn't even get enough time to get a fruit basket out for the people. They didn't even offer him a welcome to saying, thank you for letting me inside your home.
They didn't even politely knock on his door. They just went right in.
No, they went guns a-blazing. And you know what? Even the other creatures are like, okay, I know this is his home, but you know what? Like, what the fuck are you guys doing here? Like, we were doing just fine without you doing this, you know, predator versus prey shit. And now you're just here messing it all up. Like, we got to take you out. Excuse you.
So I think we've pretty much covered this topic. So I think we can just go into our favorite creature feature films. So I know we have many, but we each had to make the difficult decision to only pick one. So we will each be talking about one specific film that we love. And yeah, who wants to go first?
I had a lot of choices when it came to picking one, but I rewatched this film recently, and I did remember why I enjoyed it so much. Now, I consider this fantastic cinema, and it is called The Meg, directed by John Turteltaub. Came out in 2018. If you missed this movie, basically, there they are, exploring the ocean, when suddenly, huge 75-foot prehistoric shark, known as the Megalodon, that creature was thought to be extinct, leaving it at the bottom of the Pacific. And he rises. And you know what? He wreaks havoc. So, and Jason Statham has to save everyone. Now, this is adapted from a book called Meg, A Novel of Deep Terror. A lot of people didn't know that. Neither did I until I Googled it when I first saw it. But that's fine. Why I enjoyed this creature film is because the premise can be so ridiculous and so unbelievable. And it makes it work, not because it tries to justify it, just because it rolls with it. And it really just says, you know what? We're going with chaos in this case. We're going to see what this shark can do. Now, it's PG-13, so they really couldn't do a lot. Like, say, a film like Piranha 3D from 2011, which was one of my preliminary choices, not going to lie, in terms of gore. But what they do here is they do provide enough scare that a shark this magnitude could have actually existed, actually invaded an ocean, like invaded an ocean, an actual party that happened in the water, in the beaches. And you also see here this fight of not only survival of the fittest, but man versus beast, which is always seen through these creature features. And here you have Jason Statham basically leading the team, even though he's not the official leader, but he's trying to take down the shark because of trauma from his past. You also see that element of this monster took away things from me, traumatized me, so I have to be the one to take this down. It's that, not revenge narrative, but he's trying to get justice for himself. He's trying to get closure. So he does get involved. Also with this film, I just like that they were just like, you know what? 75-foot shark exists. Okay, Jaws, sit down, sweetie. This is a shark. He's just going to cause mayhem all over the place. He's going to chase a dog in one scene. And he literally jumps out from the ocean in one particular scene, and it's so wild and so unbelievable that it's amazing, because you're just like, how far is this film willing to go? And it goes for it. That's what can be fun about a creature feature. Yes, you have the elements of you want to make it real, but sometimes a film like this where you're just like, I can't believe this is real, it goes like, you know what, pretend. Remember what that was like? A lot of people critically didn't enjoy this. They found the premise too ridiculous, but people like me, I know I've talked to Gabriela about this film, and a couple of friends of mine have seen this, and we're just like,
it's a great film.
It's a great camp old time. I don't know what people are talking about.
I know. Like, when Jason Statham straight up looks at the camera and says, it's Megalodon. Come on, that's cinema. He had no expression in his face. It was cinema.
Absolutely. And he literally keeps that straight face throughout.
It's a mega. There's another shark.
Yeah, because they were like, they thought they caught a megalodon. Nope, you just caught a really there's big shark. There's
another one. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
But I also, you know, it's different from Jaws because Jaws was just a giant great white shark, which I have no doubt that they are real. Again, we've only explored like 5% of the ocean.
Yes.
And so if the megalodon is still around, I would not be surprised.
Okay, but if that still exists and you're on a cruise ship and you encounter it, I'm just saying.
Oh, there's
Titanic too.
All I'm saying is that there's actually a mystery of this boat, that it was like a boat with people who were like partying and stuff, and like something like caused it to capsize and there were no survivors. And it's been long assumed that it was a megalodon. This was years ago.
And what's interesting, that huge budget, it wasn't for the VFX to animate the megalodon. The megalodon just showed up on set. They had to cut him a big paycheck. And you know what? He just said, all right, I'll show up and I'll do your film. Like, the megalodon's a star here.
But also, let's just appreciate how they did not kill the dog.
Exactly. They didn't go for the dog. Spoiler, if you haven't seen it. But if you haven't seen this film.
They don't go for the dog. So don't worry about the dog.
You feel that terror and that it could happen. But it doesn't show it. It just goes for the humans. And the megalodon can even be said in the sense that it was just peacefully roaming around where it was. And then humans come in, disturb its home, and cause this explosion to make it come up to the surface from where it was and changes the temperature. And it's like, you know what? That sometimes that happens when you try to explore so much that sometimes things need to be left unexplored. Because you don't know what you're opening. You know what you know based on how far you've gone. If you keep going, there's no guarantee that what you're going to find is going to be worth the discovery if it could destroy us all. Mm-hmm. Which is a great element it plays with here. They could basically lose to the megalodon.
Yeah, the megalodon could just eat everyone.
Yeah, and then the megalodon 2 would just be megalodon 2 worldwide tour, and it would just
don't give the Sci-Fi Channel more ideas. We've already been through 6 Sharknados.
Hey, and there's a Meg 2 coming. They've approved the sequel.
And the 6-headed shark attack. I think we've been through enough.
Oh, that was a mess. Yeah. Why have a mess with Sharknado when you can have the Meg, which.
Hey, I would
Oh, it's a great movie. It's a camp old time. Like, 4 out of 5 stars I gave it.
Yes.
And I also like the international feature that it really went with an international location and it didn't just use it for a scene or two. No, it set its story there. And that's what I enjoyed it. So, The Meg, one of my favorites. Time. Watch it.
Yes.
Camp old time. If you haven't seen it, go for it. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why The Meg is a must see.
So during spooky season, I was on a hunt of watching a new horror film that I haven't seen. And I stumbled across The Descent, which it is a well-known film in the horror community, and I've never watched it. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to give it a try. And wow, cinema. So, for those who don't know what the movie is about, it is 6 friends reunite for a caving expedition, and their adventure suddenly goes wrong. It is directed by Neil Marshall, and the movie is set off on a cave, and obviously it is a perfect setup for a claustrophobic worst nightmare. It was very anxiety-inducing and effective.
I've never seen it, but have heard so much about it. And yeah, it's truly the stuff of nightmares for me.
Yeah, and again, the setting, it is such a perfect setting for a horror film, because in that specific moment, it doesn't use any supernatural elements. It just, if you take off the creature feature per se, it's still a great movie. Now, the film certainly has great jump scares, and it just has an interesting story. Now, we're here talking about the creatures. So, the creatures come in the second part of the film. They are these humans that, if you see them, it looks like they slowly turned into bats to adapt to their cave. And it's just plain creepy. And the special effects that the movie it has, the makeup effects, it is very great. It is very, you know, kind of ugly, kind of disturbing in a way that it fits the theme of the film. Recently, I found out that I am appalled and shocked that I watched the American version. I didn't watch the European version. And the last 30 seconds of the film just changed the whole story completely and the ending of the character, because for those that don't know, the character goes through a certain trauma.
No spoilers.
I'm not gonna spoil it. She goes through a certain trauma, and throughout the film we could say that the monsters are also a metaphor. And on the other hand, we have the six friends that, in a way, they're fading away. But this trip is a way of them trying to reconnect with each other. But it's falling apart. Slowly it's falling apart. And getting stranded on the cave was the last straw.
Yeah, I think that would be the last straw for anyone, Anna.
Especially when one of them didn't do their deeds and didn't, you know, try to find information about that certain cave.
Yeah.
Hold on. So their girls trip, which is supposed to be fun, just turns into a nightmare because they get stuck in a cave because no one did their research and not even book a good Airbnb.
One of them didn't do their research. Okay, all
this is, listen, posers, this is the kind of friend, that friend that doesn't do their research, you don't travel with them. They stay home. Or they go on their own.
Uh-huh. And the thing is that I'm not gonna spoil the ending, but if you're ever gonna watch this film, please do not watch the American version. Watch the European version, because it makes sense. Those last 30 seconds that they took off the film, it makes total sense, because there is some certain character development that we get from the final girl and the main character, because she goes to a certain situation that is sad and she is trying to be strong, but she isn't. And the cave, being lost in the cave, getting attacked by humans that turn into bats. You know, sometimes it is the last straw.
It's not some hot girl shit, let me
tell
you.
It is not some girl shit, hot girl shit. It's not, the vibes aren't there.
No, but I will say, I've heard of people who've seen this movie who had to pause it, the American version, and they had to, like, take a bit of a walk within their home just to like walk off the anxiety they were feeling.
And I think it's because of how close the shots are and how dark it is, because it is very dark. And even some scenes where they use some flashlights, you know, to check out how deep the cave is, it's red. So in a way, it kind of simulates that basically you're in hell, which is interesting. And also the name itself, The Descent, it is a spiral going downhill, okay? It is not going uphill.
The descent into hell.
The descent into hell and madness. Because they're certainly not having a good time.
How can you?
It's funny because I always thought, because I know of the ending of The Descent, because they consider it to be one of like the best endings of horror films. So I always assumed that that was the ending. So now, knowing that the American version has a different ending.
No, it's the European. What do you want? Was it the jump scare at the end?
Yes.
Okay, that is the American version. Because apparently the original version was too depressing, so they had to cut it off.
Yeah, but I like the depressing ending.
It was a good ending!
I've never seen it. I just know of the ending. It's a good ending.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's terrifying. It's a nightmare. I think what makes it even more terrifying is that it seems, you know, real. You can get stuck in a cave. You don't know what's in that cave.
Exactly. You don't know if there's a civilization of humans turned into bats.
Anna, that was too specific. Are you okay?
She's traumatized. I went from knowing nothing about this film except that it had a poster with girls drenched in red, like a Red Sea or something, I don't know, the poster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they were climbing, to now knowing that this film just really makes you want to make sure that whoever is booking your trip knows what they're doing, or just travel by yourself. And just be like, if I mess up, it's on me. I caught myself slipping. That's different from Shayna from accounting just messing this up for everyone.
Damn. You know what? Trust yourself, not anybody else, to book something.
Honestly, if I'm on a trip and they say, oh yeah, our next stop is going to go down this mysterious cave, I'm getting on a plane and leaving.
I would have stayed at the hotel, excuse me.
I've seen that movie. I know where it goes.
I'm not doing it. No, no, no.
And now we'd like to take a moment to talk to you about our sponsor, Anchor, the easiest way to make a podcast.
Josie, what is your creature feature pick?
So, I told the posers I was going to talk about Richard Madden's favorite movie.
Are we surprised?
Jurassic Park.
A classic, though. Great
He
taste.
Has great taste.
It's a great film.
So if you didn't know, now you know. Everything you've learned about this man has been against your will.
Honestly, he's an honorary poser.
Yes. But actually, this is a decoy. A red herring, if you will.
Oh my god.
Because I'm going to be talking about, so it's not exactly a creature feature, but it does have a creature. And I really wanted to talk about this film, but Gabriela was like, no, it doesn't count. And I'm like, I say it does. So I'm going to be talking about Annihilation, directed by Alex Garland from 2018.
Oh my god.
So this film follows a biologist that signs up for a dangerous secret expedition into a mysterious zone where the laws of nature don't apply. And the reason why I love this film is because the monsters were us all along. Now let me explain. So the two essential ingredients for making movie monsters. So a monster film, the most important thing it needs to have is a really cool monster design, which Annihilation does, and it needs a really good story. So again, the monster needs to fit the larger demands of the narrative, as it said from the No Film School website. So, monsters have rules, and there are clearly rules established for the Shimmer, which is what they have to enter and explore, which ultimately starts rearranging their DNA, turning them into the monsters. Especially the best example I can give is that, of course, as often is a trope in these kinds of films, there is a traitor. And that scene with the traitor gives way to the one of the most obvious forms of the monster, which is one of the most iconic monster sequences in the last 10 years. And it's obviously because this creature, if you have seen it, if you haven't seen it, there's just a scene with a bear. And the thing is that it starts absorbing its victims. And like, if you see the creature design, like the mouth has human teeth, the skin is pulled back, and you can see instances of a human skull on the side of its head. And the creepiest part is that when it screams, because it is actively in pain through the decomposition and the changing of its molecules and its entire biology because of this Shimmer and what is how it's affecting its environment and like nature, like a cancer, like its screams are the absorbed vocal cords of one of the victims from earlier in the film, and it's just blood curdling and scary, and like your skin crawls. And like, if you want to make a really good creature, like, just that scene alone should be a good one to study. And yeah, that is why I think this film is a really good option, and I will stand by it. Also, again, all of them go into it absolutely knowing that they will not be coming back, because there have been many failed attempts to go into the Shimmer and return. And Natalie Portman's character, who is the biologist, slowly starts figuring this out because her husband, played by Oscar Isaac, was the only one that managed to come out. Or did he? And then by the end, there's also this reflection of her facing herself in a way. And there's just a lot of cool elements to this film that just, again, make you think that sometimes the best thing you can do is do an examination of humanity and how sometimes, again, we were the monsters all along. Thank you.
Yes. Bravo.
Round of period.
No, but truly, the bear scene from Annihilation is one of my favorite scenes of all time.
Yeah, it's also just very similar to that of Predator and mm-hmm. Alien. It's just that very iconic sequence where you have the monster facing its victims, more often than not, the main character, because that is the moment where you allow the audience to be able to see what they're up against.
Yeah.
And it's just that scene where you like slow down the attack, because, for example, in Alien at the beginning, you don't see the full-fledged alien as it has grown. You just see that people are being picked off one by one. Yeah, you just have that moment where you finally get to see the threat, and then it's like a slow exposure, because obviously you can't really kill your main character at that moment, but you have to play with it. You have to tease your audience and make it believe that, yes, this person is actually in danger.
I think the most disturbing part is where... Is it the bear trying to emulate the human voice?
Yes, because it's in pain. So it's like screaming. Mm-hmm. But it's her screams for help.
Yeah, it's terrifying. And it's like the first time we see what the Shimmer can truly do, because up until that moment we had only seen, you know, how it had changed nature.
Yeah, and throughout it, like, as Natalie Portman's character is studying the biology of their surroundings, like, they already start noticing, like, hey, the longer we're here, the more that our cells are going to mutate.
Okay. So, now we move on to my pick, which when I was trying to think about which creature feature to pick, I was like, I'm not gonna pick this one. But the more I kept thinking about it, I realized I haven't talked about this film in a long time, and I love this film. So this is me saying that my pick is The Shape of Water, directed by Guillermo del Toro.
Of course.
Which, it's so unorthodox, because it is a creature film, but it's not a horror film. It's a love story. Now, The Shape of Water plays into what we discussed earlier about how sometimes the monster isn't really the creature, but the humans. Because here we have this poor creature, this poor fish man who got taken away from his home and brought into this facility to be experimented upon by the US government to be able to create a weapon, because of course. And so this poor creature is there, who will probably be dissected alive at some point. And this woman comes along and falls in love with him and teaches him sign language and how to communicate and rescues him. And it's a really beautiful story. And so, and as we see through the film, I think one of my favorite aspects of it is how when he attacks the bad guy, whose name I forgot, that he bit off two of his fingers and his fingers are sewn back on. But as the movie progresses, his fingers keep getting like black because his body is rejecting them. And so that just symbolizes about how he is the evil one, not this poor fishman who just wants to return home and be with this human woman that he fell in love with. And so it's those little details in this film that show us that. And yes, I love it. It's not my favorite Guillermo del Toro film. That will forever remain Pan's Labyrinth, which is another fantastic creature film. That again, what we were talking about Guillermo before, he plays with he paints monsters as these beautiful creatures and then makes humans be the ones who cause harm and make you think about humanity and what we do and how we influence the world around us. Is a monster really going to be the one to disturb the world, or is it going to be the human who wants to end it? It's a lot.
I just want to say that my favorite part of the film is actually the last scene where it's both so of them beautiful. Are underwater, and then like the pond, they unable to perceive the shape of you. I was like, oh my god.
Cinema. Anna, do you remember this was the first film we watched together in fine arts?
You know, okay, I'm not a romantic person, like for romance movies, but it's a parte, it mushed my heart.
It's a good, I mean, la parte que always gets to me, no matter how many times I watch it, is that when he's in the bathtub and he's talking to her friend.
Yeah.
And they talk, and he says, maybe we're both relics.
And in a sense, you can sense how the monster, in a way, he's just soft and listening to the friend, and it's not a threat. As he has a villain that he is the human, and it also just shows that humans are the monsters in some of the cases.
At no point we see the fish man be a threat, other than when he is being threatened by others, which makes sense because he's going to try to defend himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it also shows that again, if in a way, if you hurt a creature or nature or per se, it can get back to you.
Anyways, don't fuck with nature. Let creatures be. I think that's
the main thing. Because, I mean, the original creature feature, quote-unquote, and generally the first horror novel was Frankenstein by Mary Shelley. Mm-hmm. And it's all about nature versus nurture and, like, don't mess with nature.
And it also, in Frankenstein's monster, it shows, again, the theme that maybe the monsters are the humans after all.
So I think that also makes, that's what makes a creature feature stronger. Other than, obviously, because sometimes I think that, you know, creature features are fine with just being, you know, like the Meg. Just be a camp all time about humans hunting down a monster. You know, some of them work like that, But when they do get very philosophical and who is really the monster here, those creature features, I tend to love more. Anyways, I think we all agree that Guillermo del Toro always understands the assignment when it comes to monsters.
I think we can agree that the next creature feature Anna and I will be seeing is Clifford the Big Red Dog.
Period. Okay. That movie is going to be on my top 10 of this year. Okay.
Anna, aim higher. Top 5.
There's nothing more cinematic than Clifford the Big Red Dog.
And his time through New York City.
You're not wrong.
Like, when he's going to race through the Brooklyn Bridge, I'm going to give that scene an Oscar.
Okay, now that we have discussed some of our favorite creature feature films, my question is, are there any more specific types of creatures that you would like to see more films of?
Personally speaking, I would like to see the return of the werewolf film. I would like to see more of those films in a more mainstream film. I feel that that's a character, a creature that you can really use well and add to that mystery of who is the werewolf in the film, who is causing all these murders, what is the reason for it, are they in self-defense. Like, there are so many aspects you can use with a werewolf. And recently there was a film called Werewolves Within released. I have not seen it. I've heard it's good. It's on my list. But I would like to see that comeback. You know, we're getting vampires again with a couple of projects, great books that have come out. But I would also like to see a werewolf film more than I would. I'm sorry, go to that. More than I'd want to see a zombie film. Let's take a pause in the zombie film for a bit before it gets too saturated. And let's try werewolves and we can come back, you know?
I think I would like to see more creature features that are concentrated on specific types of animals that we normally see that aren't dangerous, but they are. Because they haven't done that kind of thing in a while now.
So you want one about a murderous bunny?
Hey.
Hey, Bunnicula is a really good book.
Hey, there always can be a special metaphor with it, okay?
Also, they exist. Has nobody seen the Holy Grail? Monty Python?
Oh, right. What was a good film? Crawl was a good film.
I still have to send that director my therapy bill because it combined my two biggest fears, alligators and being stuck in Florida with alligators. In a house where it's flooding. That did a number on me. I had to pause and I had to walk around the room.
No, but that's interesting. Used that
used the scare elements well.
Yeah.
I hated it. Like, I hated every minute of being scared, but I can say it's effective.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not as big of a fan of creature features as the rest of you. But I guess if I had to pick something, I would say anything underwater and just a really nice creature design, similar to those different animals that live in the deepest, darkest depths of the ocean.
I'm here for that idea. I would love that.
The ocean is so terrifying. Why don't we make more movies about it? All right,
exactly.
No one would ever go to the beach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean,
I'm just picturing something like Alien but underwater.
That would be amazing. Underwater,
and we get Cthulhu. We get Cthulhu.
Exactly.
No, not like that.
Oh, I get where Josie's going. I'm here for Josie's idea. Like, Alien, the movie Alien, underwater, you get these different kind of creatures that are like hybrid, you know, they live underwater, they're terrifying,
like something in the pipes or something, and
yeah,
it starts growing slowly.
Oh shit.
And then they go, it's a bigger leak than we thought. That's the tagline. Oh,
Yeah, because you literally have, like, instead of a spaceship, you're just underwater in, like, this huge facility, and you're, like, in the, like, very deep, like a submarine kind of situation, but it's a little bit more permanent. They've managed to stay down there. The thing is that they're so deep, it takes, like, a while to be able to travel to the surface, and something's inside.
So the boat from the Life Aquatic, or Alien. Oh my God.
The boat from the Life Aquatic, Alien, and then Kristen Stewart.
Sign me up. Say less.
That sounds wild.
Yeah, and just combine the alien, the creature from Stranger Things with the alien from Alien, and a really cool design, like that little anglerfish and some other little creatures. Yeah. Yes.
We got a blockbuster right there.
Amen.
I love that.
Have it be directed by a woman and we're all set.
Yes.
It's in the pipes. There That's we go. One of the lines. It's in the pipes.
Oh, it should. Oh my God. It should be titled something like Pipes.
No.
Just like a just random like, title.
It's something. In the pipes.
But
just like a Jeff Goldblum kind of character. It's in the pipes.
Oh my God.
And you can't use the running water.
A very, you know, a person takes off their glasses and says, it's in the pipes.
Jeff Goldblum.
Yes. We get Jeff Goldblum on the phone.
Jeff Goldblum went to Home Depot, got the repair supplies, and said, we're out of materials. And the leak hasn't stopped.
They have to get to the surface, but they can't.
Our lifeboats are missing. What happened? It took them.
It deactivated them. Yes.
I'm just saying.
You're onto something, yes.
Onto something huge. This could be the start of something new.
Okay, so there are two things that I really like that I would love to see more of. And that is shapeshifters and gargoyles. I am a big fan of both things, and I wish we could see more, because think about it, shapeshifters are so menacing because it's in the name. They can shapeshift into anything.
That's why I really liked You Are Not My Mother, but I did not talk about it or choose it as my pick because we saw it at TIFF, and I don't know what's going to happen with it, but please, mm-hmm. if you ever get the chance to watch You Are Not My Mother, watch it.
Also, yeah. Shapeshifters are coming back. I mean, Secret Invasion is coming, so.
But that's different. That's different.
I know what you mean, but I'm here like. Exact. Thank you, Josie. Thank you.
I want a horror film about a shapeshifter. Think of it like the thing. I want a horror film like The Thing about a shapeshifter.
And the shapeshifter in question is Paris Hilton.
And Gargoyles. I love the TV show Gargoyles. It's one of my favorite shows. And obviously that one's for kids. So obviously it's not as dark as it can get.
But adults still love it today. I saw an episode a while back. It hits.
It's fucking great.
But, and I think there was a movie in development for a bit.
I think it fell through. But Gargoyles are so cool. And just so imagine the menace that, you know, people know that these gargoyles are going to come back, are going to come to life at night, but they are not able to do anything about it to stop them. That would be so cool.
I'm here for it. I'd be down to see it. I'm intrigued. Yes. I'll see a trailer.
Oh. Yeah. Okay, yo estaba aquí pensando como what would I would like to see more of. More erotic monster flicks. Thank you.
Oh my God. Say it with your whole chest. We already got the fish fucking.
They were fish fornicating, ma'am.
Fish fornication. And that's all for today's episode. We'd like to give a shout out to all the kind people sending love our way. Make sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and all that good stuff to stay up to date on all our shenanigans as well as our never-ending Eternals promotion. Watch Eternals on November 5th. So if you'd like to keep up with me, you can follow me on Twitter at Gabby_Burgos27 and on Letterboxd at Gabby Cristina.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram as Anna_Sophia and on Letterboxd as Anna_Sophia. And Hail Ratma.
You can find me on Twitter and on Letterboxd at Leading Mohicans.
And you can find me at The Josie Marie on Twitter and Letterboxd. Again, thank you for listening. And remember, we're all film posers. Bye.
Bye. Bye.